Welcome once again, Night of Living Dreads. I'm Otis B. Dreads, and Mal is taking again another week off, but he assures me that next week is looking real good. So once again, I think this is like what, the third week in a row since Malice has been away. Good friend Bobby is here with me, and boy, do we have a show tonight, man.
Rare form tonight.
Oh man, this will get you thinking, and that's really what it did to me. But before we dive into it, because there is so much, and we'll see how this goes towards the end of the podcast, and there may be a part two of this. We may have to have another show to further, because this is a rabbit hole, my friend. Gorehounds of Horror. .com, Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook, as well as Night of the Living Dreads. That's no A in Dreads, Night of the Living Dreads.com. We're also over there on Facebook as well. So, let's just dive right in. I don't even know if we're even going to take a break. I think we'll just use every leg because we might need it. We're going to talk about Jack the Ripper.
Jack Tripper.
Jack.
Yes, indeed.
Jack T. Ripper. And Bobby, again, welcome and thanks for sitting in once again, man. It's been fun, and I've been waiting because I know you have have done extensive research. We were talking earlier, even as a small child, your dad was turning you on to it. He was intrigued by this story, and it's a super intriguing story.
I mean, man.
It can just go on and on. So I couldn't wait to do, a show about Jack T. Ripper. And
it's always a fun topic, man.
Or Jack Tripper. Yeah. What's going on there?
Yeah, I know, right? It's pretty weird. He had to know that he named him that and put two and two together.
Yeah, lives with two girls who sleep around. You said, basically prostitutes. You know.
Who knew it was all a show about Jack the Ripper?
Man.
Kidding.
We're not going to talk so much about the murders. There were five, and as we mentioned, possibly more.
Most of the people, and like you said, it's the Jack the Ripper stuff is since I was a kid, man. And it's a huge community.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge community
online,
of people,
yeah.
Man. It's got a big online presence. I got a name on every one of the message boards, and I've been doing it for quite some time. Everybody's got their favorite suspects. Yeah, it's a really interesting topic, man.
And we're gonna run down a lot of these, probably the main ones, because they said there was what, 80 suspects at one time?
Yeah, minimum. They're
minimum
even more
80.
Than that. The people
right.
That they were following around. They were actually doing door-to-door checks at one point and going into people's homes, looking for evidence.
Yeah, this was such a, and we're talking about you know, the end of September, you know, going into October, you know,
the end of October,
five murders.
Yeah, five that they would all agree on, but most of the people in the community know that there were definitely some before that, and possibly even a couple
after, right?
Yeah,
and these were prostitutes. They all had that common thread, prostitutes, and at that time, because this was a very a rough part of London, Whitechapel.
Yeah,
you know, you had the, you know, and it was at that time the epicenter of finance.
Yeah.
And then right next to this, you know, all the rich elites, you have, you know, Skid Row, basically.
Yeah, literally right next to it.
They said, you told me that it's been said that place at that time, you know, just smelled of piss and shit.
Yep, it was
just a horrible place to live.
One of the worst slums on the planet at the time.
Right next to, you know, one of the richest cities in the world at the time. Yep. Very ironic, but...
Yep, they can look out their doors and see those towers. That's right. For sure. Yeah.
As a reminder of how poor you are.
Yeah. And it was packed, too, not to mention.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we watched, you know, as we've been talking about this, you know, pretty much since you got over here. Yeah. And, you know, you watch some of these documentaries and they'll show you depictions of, you know, that time. And, yeah, it was just, they were packed in like sardines.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah. You know, like I said, they were so poor that they would try to get up a penny for the night just so that they can go into a building and lean on a rope to have a place to sleep.
Lean on a rope.
Yep. You know, so, you know, big long ropes that stretch the rooms and you could have, you know, 40 people on one rope. So for a penny, you got the luxury of sleeping on a rope, but you got warmth.
Yeah.
You know, and most of them didn't have the money to do that. Prostitution was rampant in the East End at that time.
As well as alcoholism. There was, you know, well, of course you get down in these Skid Row, really, really poor, you know, neighborhoods. You're going to find, even today, you get in the, you know, some of the poor neighborhoods, you know, wherever in these big cities, and you see a lot of drug use. You see a lot of, you know, alcohol abuse and things like that. So very similar there too. So you got all these drunk prostitutes, namely five.
Yeah. Five main ones.
But again, there could have been more before. There could have been some after.
Yeah.
You know, drunk prostitutes, five of them, and they're getting some, all of them brutal, mind you, but some of them a hell of a lot more brutal than others.
Yeah, all of them nasty, but definitely.
Horrible. Yeah. So most people, they know pretty much about, you know, the killings. Just, you know, just like I mentioned, you know, drunk prostitutes being pretty much sliced up in a very precise manner that only, you know, a person with certain... knowledge of the anatomy, of is being a part of the medical field. You know, you have to have a certain type of knowledge to be doing some of the things that were done, you know, to these prostitutes. But so most people know about these, you know, these things. I think what's going to be interesting is we need to talk about these suspects, because from there, I mean. Again, it's pretty much common knowledge, the story of Jack the Ripper and what happened with these prostitutes. But what a lot of people, you know, who just maybe have a basic knowledge of the story, like myself, up until here recently, and, you know, you were telling me about, you know, all the theories that you came up with, some of them very compelling.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we need to focus in on, because this, again, is like being in a rabbit hole, man. You're just going down the rabbit hole.
It is. You know, once you get started, it's hard to get off of it, because, you know, so many suspects.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such an interesting story for the time.
It really is.
Like we were talking about, you know, it's 1888. So here in the United States, it was the Wild West, you know?
Right.
And just to think that over there, you know, was a civilization of people, very rich people living side by side with very poor people in slums in this metropolis, you know, and having this kind of problem. You know, with a supposed serial killer, or, you know, it's an interesting time period.
It certainly is. And
it gets you in the mind frame.
Yeah, and, you know, when you know, later we'll discuss maybe some of the brutal ways that these drunk prostitutes, you know, died and how they were killed. I mean, and then you think, this is 1888.
Yeah.
And look how these, you know, some of these women were just absolutely mutilated.
Yeah.
I mean, just grotesque shit, you know, shit that you would see in maybe a modern horror film.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it was very strange. So Bobby, why don't you start with, and you can start with your favorite suspect. We can give it maybe a quick rundown and just name off the suspects, and then go back and discuss those. How you want to do that? I'll leave that up to you, my friend.
Well, I think for people, the fun of it is jumping in yourself head first,
mm-hmm.
And just looking at the suspects. Learning the story if you don't know the story.
Sure.
But, just dumping into any one suspect, it'll lead you everywhere else.
Oh, absolutely.
Somebody that you might like or think, that's really good. It might even just be the way that they look in their picture that makes you go, something weird about that guy. I'm going to look at this dude.
Right.
Yeah, from there, it just snowballs. Yeah,
and that's the intriguing part of the story, really. The murders themselves,
So there's suspects galore out there.
What are some of the top ones in your mind?
The top ones, it seems to be, are Aaron Kosminski. Mm-hmm. Definitely be the number one, I think, out there. He was in a mental home,
mm-hmm.
Since a year after the murders. His own family took him to the mental home. And I think it was because of a police report at the time, or actually years later that came out, where it seemed to name this guy as somebody that was identified
mm-hmm.
as Jack the Ripper. He's definitely the tops. I don't want to give too much of him away because right. it's interesting reading, but we can.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of full of the Jack the Ripper knowledge here, man. Don't hold back.
So people really like him, and I think there's a misunderstanding about him and that he wasn't really the one who was being identified by somebody, but, it does even so, he's still a really good suspect because the police report said it would be a Polish Jew or that it was a Polish Jew. His name is Kosminski, and he's, he ended up dying in a mental home in northern London in 1919. And so, just from that alone, people like him as a suspect. Naturally, right. if you get somebody that they think has identified somebody that's seen him, you would think, the case closed.
Right.
But once you get a little bit further into it, you realize that it really wasn't him that was probably being identified. It's not really specified. The Kosminski name comes tied to that years later.
Right.
So, still a good suspect. People really still like him. The leather apron stuff, or the garment that one of right. the victims was wearing.
Yes.
Somebody bought that.
Mary
years
so
ago.
And so I believe her
yeah,
name was
I think it might have been Elizabeth Strides.
And
so somebody bought that and it had DNA on it. They had it tested and said that came out and said it was Kosminski's. They had tracked it with a relative and knew it was him, but
they find semen on it
and they found semen on it as well, and it was tested and it was said to match Kosminski's family, only to come out that it was all fouled up and that the DNA was actually matched 99% of the population at the time.
Yeah.
So that kind of threw that under the bus too. But he's still, even after all that, people really like looking at that guy.
Now, I think before we get into any more, suspects, maybe we should describe, some of these murders and the way that these prostitutes were killed, because... Mm-hmm. That's really, I think, a big part of, really naming a suspect, because there's certain things, again, that I think, you'd have to have certain types of knowledge of the anatomy and everything, because there was one of the victims, they said in just one cut, put the knife in and cut in one swoop and took out, what was it, the vagina,
the top of the vagina, kidney, and a uterus,
and just one cut.
With one cut, they didn't pull the blade back up once it was in the body.
Right,
it was one cut that was jagged, and the reason it was jagged was specifically seems to be to get these specific organs from the body.
Like, yeah,
it wasn't a smash and grab. It was definitely
right.
I know what I'm looking for,
mm-hmm.
kind of a deal.
And, so a lot of these, like some of these bodies that were found, the worst one being the last one.
Yeah.
That was the one in the apartment.
Yeah.
And he had all kinds of time, whoever Jack the Ripper is,
yeah.
they had all kinds of time because versus the other ones, he only had a span of, what did you say, about 5-10 minutes
yeah.
because of the heavy patrolling.
Yeah.
At that time, once the murder started, That last one, though, he had all the time in the world.
Yeah,
he's just in the apartment.
Yeah, he had all night. He
made the best of it.
He worked on that body, and I got to say, you know, you and I, we look up some gruesome shit sometimes, you know. Yeah, I've never seen anything as gruesome as that.
It was like straight from a movie, really.
Yeah, like Faces of Death when we were a kid doesn't show something like that.
Yeah.
It was completely horrific. She was skinned. She, you know, organs removed.
And you can actually see the pictures, the actual photographs of this woman at that time.
It was absolutely some of the first ever photography of a crime scene.
Yeah, and what a crime scene it was. So the point being, you know, so we can, you know, get back into the suspects. The point being, you kind of have to have some certain kind of knowledge. You have to know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, he went right in. He didn't, like, you know, cut from, like, you know, throat to, you know, all the way down and then just open it up and start digging. No, very precise cuts.
Yeah. It looks as though, I mean, even though they're crude, done at night, but they're done so quickly. And to be that quick and that accurate.
Yes.
They always, they thought, for a long time back then, when it first started, it would have to be a doctor,
at least
somebody who had some kind of, you know, anatomy training, you know, student doctor, you know, somebody who's worked on cadavers or something.
I think
like
they said, you know, even too, you know, men that were butchers were also kind of close there too.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a little bit different, but
yeah.
You know, gutting pigs. We may be a little bit different anatomy wise, but.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I can see where they would try and make that connection. So who's the next suspect on your list? We have Kosminski? Yeah.
Yeah, the Polish Jew. He'd probably be the number one. A lot of people like Druitt.
Mm-hmm. I didn't find him too compelling when I heard about, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some things, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely worth the research to look into him, just because his life in itself is pretty bizarre. But, you know, his own family had suspicions that he was Jack the Ripper at the time, and they were pretty forthcoming about they really thought he was. The murder, so much as we know where the murder stopped at Kelly at the end, he committed suicide.
Right.
By jumping.
Is that, what, like four months after?
Yeah, he jumped and drowned himself in the Thames River, and the killing seemed to stop after that. So people like him a lot because of that, because he's unknown.
Mm-hmm.
But his family said that he suffered from sexual psychosis.
Right.
And they really thought that he was Jack the Ripper, his family did at the time. I mean, we're talking about his own brothers and sisters, mom and dad. They all really were
interesting,
kind of giving the hint that, hey, man,
turn against his ass.
Yeah, so people really like him a lot because he's unknown, though. There's not a whole lot known about him. So
what you would think would maybe make it hard to make a person a suspect when you don't really know a whole lot about him. Because the more you know about somebody, the more, you know, concrete that you can make this accusation of this person being a suspect.
Sure. And like I said, they really don't have much to go on as far as why he would do something like that. I mean, if he's a sexual guy, you know, sexual psychosis or whatever, I can see it. But maybe, you know, it's real iffy, man, to attach them both together like that in this case, considering that, really, there's not a whole lot of evidence that there was really semen, and he had such a short amount of time to do this stuff that I don't see him, you know, beating off or something while he's killing somebody.
I mean, yeah, you didn't have that much time.
So, yeah, I'm
given the time, though.
I'm not a big believer in Druitt, but I still like him. If somebody comes out with something new about it, I still look at it.
Well, you know, if anybody is inspired by this podcast to look further into it, you know, you really have to keep in mind, even though somebody, I don't think, you always got to group them in. You have to start weeding out people. I mean, as we were talking earlier, you know, I mean, they even went as simple as, you know, looking at people named Jack.
Yeah, something as simple as that.
You know,
and the one thing I make sure that I don't do is dog anybody suspects, because
people
do get carried away with it, man, and they really start doing research into their favorite suspects, and then it's a real thing, and nobody is known to be right or wrong or whatever, so everything's all speculation anyway.
Yeah,
none of it can really be proven, right?
But it's, you know, it's fun to theorize, and it's one of those unsolved, you know, crimes. Nobody knows. And like you said, you got whole communities, you know, online communities that's out there, you know, pretty much, you know, playing Nancy Drew with the, you know, Jack the Ripper mystery, you know. And again, yeah, these people, they are serious about this shit. They take this very serious. So, and that's a good point. You know, if you are talking about this, you know, with other people, and they say, well, I think this person may be a, you know, you don't be shitting on them. You know, because you never know. None of us know, and that's the thing.
I could tell you when I first started in on this that I certainly had my favorite suspect, and even mine has shifted over the years because of different information people have brought me about other people. I'm like, well, man, that's a really good suspect too.
Right.
And that's what I mean. Once you start diving into this stuff, forget about it, man. It'll consume you. If you're a person who likes murder mystery novels or something, this is a real life one.
Oh yeah,
that they're wanting to get solved, and they, communities of people get together and they really discuss this stuff, you know, not to mention 5 real people died, you know, it's real life stuff. They often get overshadowed, but not by people in this community. There's all kinds of stuff where people go to their graves, lay flowers of the victims and stuff like that. You know, they ain't the dog, the victims. In a community like that, it's definitely just to share ideas, you know, because, you know, it's a curiosity.
And they still do it to this day. They do the Jack the Ripper tours we were talking about, where they'll go to the specific place in Whitechapel where the, you know, the victims were found.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, 1888 to this day, 2018, it's still a huge deal to a lot of people.
Yeah, people come from all over the world to London to take those tours because that's how big this community is with this. It's, you know, this and the Zodiac communities are huge, but Jack the Ripper is by far the biggest community out there. And everybody's got their suspects, and it really narrows down to just a few, really. Once you get into the community, you realize you're talking about less than 5 that people are really clued in on. But who knows? It might come out at some point that it's somebody nobody ever even thought of before.
And you know, that's the fun of it, getting to that, you know, point, or, you know, just, again, it's just, you know, big murder mystery, you know.
It's pretty cool.
And to think that at one time there were, and I've seen upwards to, you know, 100 plus suspects.
Oh, yeah.
I think basically even just really getting into this, because we've talked about this way before I even started the podcast, and you know, so I kind of had some, I kind of had my own, you know, I only had about 3, 4, 5 people that I really thought, you know, there was a strong case against.
Right.
You know, 100 people, 80 plus people, minimum, 80 plus suspects.
Yeah.
I've never heard of a case where there's that many suspects.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there has been, but that just seems like an awful lot of suspects for one case.
Well, people, like you said, we talked about when this first started off, you had 2 major groups they were looking at, doctors and butchers.
Right.
And so every one of them pretty much were automatically a suspect to them.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them would have been questioned.
Yeah.
It was a huge deal. You know, this is a big thing back then. They were really looking for this guy.
And, you know, common sense, you know, again, mentioning the way that these prostitutes were killed and the precise manner in which, you know, they were carved up, mutilated, organs taken out. You know, you could probably, you know, you could exclude a lot of those.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, this guy, this chap over here, he don't, you know... There's no way he could have done this in that little bit of time, that precise. You know, so you could really start to narrow it down, you know, quite a bit. Who's next on your suspect list?
Walter Sickert is a big one.
Yeah.
He has a lot to do with novels that came out from a mystery writer, and Patricia Cornwell.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so her books are... I mean, she spent a lot of money on this.
Oh, yeah. She spent like £2 million.
Just in paintings from Walter Sickert.
Right. And notes or letters or things that he wrote, you know, just artifacts from him. Yeah.
They say she spent upwards of $6 million investigating Jack the Ripper case. And she does a good job. Walter Sickert is on a lot of people's radars, not just because of her. I mean, his name's been thrown around for quite some time.
He's on my radar, yeah.
He's a legendary painter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his paintings were selling for big money back when he was painting them. He was a rich guy. You know, there's a lot to be said about him. You know, Walter Sickert.
His paintings, though. I mean, one painting, you know, Jack the Ripper's bedroom.
Yeah.
And it's a painting of him standing in his bedroom.
Yeah, he painted a series of paintings called the Camden Town Murders.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them seem to depict, you know, what the murder victims look like when their pictures were taken and stuff. It didn't come out until after his paintings were done. He seemed to have some insight.
It does seem that way. Yeah, it's pretty eerie that he would just paint these, you know, pictures, and then you look at it and you're like, man, was that guy there?
Right.
You know, I mean, that's just too dead on.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, people can do research on the fistula and stuff, but the fact that he had that going on.
Which is just, what, if people have never heard of that?
Well, if you have a fistula of the penis like he did, that means that you were born with the inability to urinate, and they have to cut part of your... the fistula out, which means for him they would have had to cut half of his penis off.
Wow.
And although he could feel pleasure sexually and stuff, he couldn't actually perform sexually.
Right.
He could have an orgasm, things like that. Well, there's been, like I said, maybe for another show, but
right,
there was a guy I was in jail with at one point that I knew. He was a serial, he was supposed to be a serial killer. They got him on one murder, but they know he did more. But he also had a fistula as well. It seems to be a common theme
with serial killers who, you know, brutally attack women.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, not to be completely proven, still speculation at this point, but just another thing to add on
theory,
to Walter
yeah.
Sickert is that maybe it was a sexual thing, but who knows with Walter Sickert. But he does come up a lot, and he comes up not just by himself, but surrounded by other Jack the Ripper people. Because, like I said, he was rich.
Uh-huh.
And most of the people who are Jack the Ripper suspects have a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, being on the East End, they would stick out. Like, you know, the one witness that said they saw Jack the Ripper talking to this woman, and he had a golden watch hanging dangling down. You didn't see that in the East End.
No.
He stuck out.
Exactly. So, and, you know, you have these, you know, these suspects, you know, I'd say that, you know, in the top five, these suspects, you know, very rich.
Yeah.
The hell you doing in the slums, man? Well, you know, why are you going to pay, you know, 10 cents for a room or whatever it was when you could, you know, you have the money to pay $50 a night for a room?
Right.
And you know, why even do that?
Yeah. And there was one guy who was a suspect who stayed at the East End, even though he could have stayed in the ritzy part of town, which was right down the street. And it's telling.
And
his name was Francis Tumblety. He's another suspect.
Yes. He is really up high on the, you know, he's big on your list, ain't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely a big target. But he goes along with another one for me. You see, you want me to tell him my theory?
Sure.
Okay.
Because I was going to get into that next. Once we got through some of the big suspects, you know, that people are really zeroing in on, then we can go into our theories, because I feel the same way as you do with this theory, and that would be not one killer,
right?
But two, possibly more.
Possibly more.
You know, and what is that theory? Because this is really interesting, and I think this is probably the most plausible. I just don't think, which we can get into after you tell us your theory about how it's virtually impossible for one person to do, you know, what, you know, happened there.
Especially after the second murder, because they had really ramped up, you know, patrols on the street, sometimes tripling
threefold,
the patrols.
Yeah.
And so these cops would be circling blocks. That's what they did with their lanterns at all times, different blocks. Some of them were just doing one block, some of them were doing two, but you had a minimal amount of time if you wanted to kill somebody.
Right.
Because you knew somebody was going to come by, not to mention, it's a very busy place. Even at night, there's people walking to work, people coming home.
Hitting the pubs.
People out and about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what got it for me was the double murder event. The night that there were two murders, they found one body, and then 45 minutes later, found another body.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about half a mile away in a place called Miter Square. One body, the first body that they found, just had her throat slit, which was not a usual tactic for Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, pretty tame compared to some of his other works.
He's some of them, the organs were taken. Some of them, just a couple, two of them had their throats slit.
Mm.
And that was pretty much it. Maybe a few more marks, but it's like he was interrupted, maybe. So I had always thought, wouldn't it be, why didn't anybody question whether or not that those were committed by two different people? You know,
right.
Do you see killing somebody, knowing that somebody's coming, walking further down the street, taking a right, and then murdering somebody else? Yeah, to me, it just really made more sense, and I had to question,
it's ballsy.
Could it be two people? Yeah, it would be very ballsy.
It'd be very, very ballsy.
Very. And so that got me thinking, could there be two killers? And when you start to look into the investigation and read the paperworks and stuff from the time and the articles, you find out that there were witnesses who said that there were two people there. The one specifically was Jack the Ripper seemed to be doing his killing, and somebody was walking by, and the person who was supposed to be Jack the Ripper had hollered over across the street to one of his buddies because he saw this person coming and said something to him in Jewish dialect. And the guy chased this spectator off. Like Jack the Ripper was working in tandem with somebody else as a lookout.
Right.
And that was compelling to me, that right there. And then during one of the murders, there was a guy standing out in front of a pub when one of the victims walked past him, and he asked her if I can get sixpence so I can go into the bar and buy me a beer.
Right.
And she said she didn't have it. Well, later on, somebody else had seen her walking by with another guy. That guy's still standing on the corner and whatnot. And notices her with this guy. I forget where I was going. I lost my train of thought. I get to him death and get ahead of myself.
Oh, right.
But anyway, he was supposed to be been witnessed at that time.
Right.
And whatnot, but I forget where I was going. That's how in-depth this gets.
It is, man. It's mind-boggling when you start getting into it because, you know, one theory leads to a side theory, to it, you know, and then this name pops up in a theory, and you got to go with that one.
Yeah, and the thing was, is this woman who identified him after the first guy seen her and talked to her about the sixpence, she told the police later on that after she had saw her walking away with this guy, she went around the corner and seen another guy standing there looking at her. And she would have definitely identified, I think, this guy who they say it was, because she would have known of him as a person in the street. She was a prostitute also. Mm-hmm. They all knew everybody on the streets that late at night. We're talking 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, most of them were about that late.
She didn't seem to recognize who this person was. And I think that that was possibly a lookout for him as well.
And, you know, if you know, the lookout, if, you know, one of the killers, and I say killers because I'm right there with you, you know, with the, you know, I don't think one person could have done it, but if, you know, one of these guys, you know, were from the well-to-do side of the neighborhood, of course you wouldn't recognize him.
Yeah.
Because he's normally not down there.
Right.
You know, but you get all these other poor people walking up there. Yes, she probably recognized most of them because she sees them every day. You know,
she would figure.
You know,
and not be recognized. And that's why I believe, you know, there's two of them. And I believe that the Francis Tumblety that we're talking about and Walter Sickert as well teamed up together. Both very rich
people. That was my next question. Which one of the suspects, you know, if not most of them, you know, you think, you know, were working in tandem?
At least those two. Francis Tumblety, a great suspect. And he didn't come along until the 90s. When a Jack the Ripper enthusiast who also works at the police department in London, who collected Jack the Ripper stuff and everything, got a bundle of the Jack the Ripper stuff along with this. As he was looking through it, you know, after he bought it, he realized that there was deposition given by one of the leading detectives at the time, who named a suspect at the time. And not only named him, but put in there that he thinks definitively this is the guy. And his name was Francis Tumblety. He was an American quack doctor. And
he was a snake oil salesman.
He was, but he did have a short stint of working as a physician for Abraham Lincoln.
Interesting.
He was well-to-do, he had money, and he was pretty much famous in his time.
And what was the deal with him? He had such a violent hatred towards women.
He was actually married, and his wife oddly enough, the reason he started to hate women, he actually turned into a homosexual where he will exclusively be with men.
I mean, that's an extreme hatred towards women that you, all of a sudden you want balls on the chin.
Yeah. And the reason for it is, and here's the kicker, is that the reason that he left his wife is because she was being a prostitute behind his back. So he had a deep hatred for women because of her, and she was a prostitute. There was a... We'll have to get into why that is so, you know, after you know he comes back to America.
Mm-hmm.
But he was actually arrested during the time of the Jack the Ripper killings. And for the 4 days that he was in jail, obviously there was no Ripper murders, no letters to the police, because Jack the Ripper also wrote letters to the police.
Well, probably one of the first ones, you know, really well-known serial killers to taunt and antagonize the police as, you know, Son of Sam.
Yeah.
Berkowitz and the Zodiac killers we were talking a little bit about earlier as well. He started taunting the police. And these letters, I mean, I'm telling you people, you guys got to go out and read some of these letters. They're out there. You know, we got information is endless, you know, and you got a computer, you know, a phone. Read some of these. It's some eerie fucking shit.
Yeah,
it really, really is.
Yeah, it's some scary stuff at the time. It's scaring the hell out of people.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tumblety was in jail because he was in there for having male-on-male sex in the street.
In the street.
Yeah, indecency and, you know, crimes, you know, of having sex in the street.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And he posted bail. Rich guy posted bail, got out, spent a little bit more time there. He had an upcoming, where he had to see the judge. He had a court date, you know, for that. And as he was out again, Mary Kelly's death happened, where she was completely mutilated in her apartment. And shortly after that, he fled under an assumed name on a boat to come back to America, landed in New York. Scotland Yard followed him. You know, they had,
Scotland Yard's been, you know, and they had been watching him before he even left for quite some time.
Yeah, they were watching him. They had an eye on him. And he couldn't even escape even under assumed name. They knew where he was. They were on the next ship after him.
Which is suspicious in my opinion there anyway. Yeah. You know, you got this indecent type charge. Or, you know, you're out, you know, giving rim jobs in the street or something, you know. It just seems like something a man of his wealth, you know. Yeah. He could have probably just paid a fucking fine and got out of that.
Yeah. And Francis Tumblety, and he
But I think, like you had mentioned earlier, I think that he started feeling at that point, like, oh shit, I think they may be on to me. So he thinks he can, you know, flee them by getting a different name and coming to the States.
Yeah, he certainly wasn't fleeing because of an indecency charge. He had plenty of money to pay that misdemeanor fine.
Exactly.
He wasn't trying to escape that. He was escaping something much bigger, and they would have never followed somebody back for an indecency crime.
All the way across.
They followed him to America because he was their leading suspect. He was the man on their radar because he collected uteruses. He was a physician that had a fascination with collecting uteruses and kidneys and wombs and even vaginas.
Because he wanted the uterus he wanted of like all different types of women, poor women, you know, rich women, black women, white women, it didn't matter.
Yeah, because check this out. When he gets back to New York, right, the newspapers in New York, the day he lands, says Jack the Ripper comes to America.
Now, why would the papers come out with such a bold statement like that if they had not been told maybe by Scotland Yard somehow?
They were absolutely convinced.
They were convinced this was the guy.
This is the guy. And the reasons for being are good. When the detectives here caught it and they questioned his friends and family, there wasn't one of them who didn't say he very well could be Jack the Ripper. He collected uteruses and wombs.
Mm.
He had a fascination with that. Known to be a very bizarre person.
Right.
And
well, he looked bizarre. I mean, at least in the depiction of some of the documentaries, he looked like Guy Fawkes.
Yeah. And there was a story about a meeting that his friends gave.
Oh, this is a good one.
When their wives and husbands were there. And they asked him, why don't you have a lady over tonight? He said, I would sooner feed you poison than to bring a brood like that into this home. He went on a rant and a tirade about why women were so lowly. That's what convinced his friends and family that he definitely could be.
And then, you know, And yes, that is compelling. But then you think about, you know, throw this into the, you know, the whole mix. Okay, he is a rich person.
Yeah,
you know, he's very wealthy.
Yes,
and you know, we'll take, you know, and you get a lot of wealthy people. They're stuck up. They look down on the low lives. You know, and at times blame them for the problems of society.
Yeah,
you know. So you got a bunch of drunk prostitutes running around, you know, Whitechapel, Skid Row.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's already got this deep-seated hatred of women. And on top of that, maybe thinks that, you know, oh, well, I am wealthy, you know, and these are scum.
Right.
You know, and then just takes his, you know, his fucking anger out
yeah.
on all these, you know, women that maybe he feels is bringing society down.
Right.
So he goes to this poor part of town.
Yeah.
To take and start killing, you know, prostitutes.
Yeah, brutally killing them.
Brutally.
With another person.
I believe.
Both rich, him and Walter Sickert.
Mm-hmm.
Both in the area at the time. Tumblety actually stayed on the East End while he was there. A rich man staying in one of the poorest slums
right.
on the planet when he comes here.
Yeah.
You know, a little suspicious.
It very well is, yeah.
Walter Sickert could have very well been friendly with him. They were both of the same brood. And they both had something, I think, to get out of it. I think Walter Sickert was just as ruthless as Tumblety was. I think that Walter Sickert got his paintings out of it. He got a story out of
it.
You know, and then being friends, if Tumblety were to have ever let him in on this secret, you know, like, hey, man, you know, this I like to do this, or I've done this in my life. And Sickert would be like, man, I got to see that. You know, it could have been anything.
Mm-hmm.
But Sickert did do the paintings, very similar. They you know, if they were buddies, just in on it together to make something off of
right.
it together, you know, I could totally see it.
Oh, and, I can too, yeah.
And with the stories of the lookout, the other person being there, the double event, I really, really believe that there was at least two people involved in it.
And you know that this is the thing, as you know, we briefly mentioned that there has to be two people. Yeah. Anybody that looks at this with, you know, two fucking brain cells to rub together will realize that there had to have been like one of the murders, for instance. I think it's the one where there's just the throat was slit and you know, it seemed to be kind of a rush job, like almost maybe somebody walked in as soon as one of the cops walking around, you know, I mean, or was it a passerby or some
who? Two guys going to work in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Two
and,
of them.
And just missed it happen.
Just missed it happen.
I mean, it is absolutely remarkable, the timing. So remarkable, in fact, that it almost makes it impossible that there was only one guy.
Yeah, we got to see it for what it is. You're talking about the East End, one of the most populated parts of the world at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And right out in the streets, you know, and nobody saw anything, including all the cops walking around, all the people going to work, all the people leaving the bars, all the people going to the bars. You know, for him just to have the balls to go do that, I don't think it was balls. I think it was somebody helping him, somebody watching out to see if somebody was coming.
Right.
He got away with it just barely a couple times. And, man, if that's coincidence, then wow.
Yeah, well, and we can't forget another suspect, which I thought was just absolutely hilarious at best, Jill the Ripper.
Yeah, yeah.
They literally came up and thought, "Well, hey, could this be a woman?"
And like I said, I don't
Jack and Jill.
It's weird, isn't it?
Think, wow.
Well, you know, like I said, I don't look down on anybody's choices, and certainly I've even looked into it. You know, just because you got to,
right? Sure.
I don't, you know,
explore all you know possibilities when you're looking at something of this magnitude.
I mean, you know, thinking at first, you know, it could have been a grudge with a fellow prostitute who took money from her or something, and she had this clique of friends, and you know, you look at every side of it or whatever.
Yeah.
So some people it might still be plausible, but from what I've seen, not too many.
To me,
people
it's hilarity at its best. It really is.
Whoever did this was very strong. Each time the head was almost severed from the neck cut, and
exactly
brutal strength. And there are certainly strong women, especially virile prostitutes on the East End, could be pretty broody.
Yeah.
So.
And you know with but, I'm not buying that because like you said, you know, granted, you know, it was probably maybe some sort of surgical instrument, a scalpel of some sort. Maybe had a scalpel, and then maybe just had a regular knife.
Yeah.
You know, I would think, because one of the killings, they said that, you know, he cut through the neck all the way to the spinal cord.
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost just not slitting the jugular
it's
there.
It's almost severing the head.
Completely. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's just flopping around there at that point. Yeah. I mean, that's brutal for 1888.
Very brutal cut. And that's another thing that leads me to the two people's theory, is because the two of them were unlike the other ones. You know, just with just killing wounds.
Right.
You know.
Maybe just the simple, you know, cutting of the throat was done by a person who did not have that background.
Yeah.
You know, was not able to go in and get organs. Maybe they were.
Just wanted the thrill of the kill.
Yeah.
You know, maybe to have something to paint about later, maybe. Or maybe just because he's that close a friend.
Right.
You know, we're living in a time where, you know, doctors buying organs and bodies was not uncommon, and it was illegal, and people were doing it on the black market. Right. And
making a lot of money off of it.
Yeah. Just a brutal bastard wanted to do that. Many theories. The Jill theory for me is really thin, but you know.
Again, you got to take all these theories into account. Look at them, as ridiculous as they may you know, seem, or a suspect is non-suspicious as they may seem. You still got to look at them. You know, at least look at it. Check it off your list. Yeah. You know, when you can definitively say to yourself, no, I can't buy into, you know, no, Mickey Mouse was not Jack the Ripper. You know?
Yeah, there's too much stuff that might make one person a better suspect.
Absolutely.
That.
Yeah.
And it's just too convincing for somebody, you know. So, yeah. And then, you know, I know you're going to do a podcast on it, but H.H. Holmes is a suspect now. Yeah,
we started talking about that, brought that up. That's interesting. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because H.H. Holmes, for one, okay, and you know, I eventually want to do a show on H.H. Holmes, and because he's very similar when it comes to, you know, Jack Tripper.
Jack Tripper. Yes.
He's very similar. He's got medical background. As a matter of fact, when he was a med student, and him and his lab partner, they said for a year and a half would spend 20 to 40 hours a week just steady carving up bodies.
Yeah.
And cadaver, you know, for medical reasons, you know, but you're going to have a pretty strong knowledge of the anatomy, you know, doing that much.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. He'd definitely be capable of doing that quick of a dissection, for sure. And he also looked the part, man. There were people who witnessed Jack the Ripper. There was witnesses. And the way they described him, with the derby hat and the mustache, not only does it match Tumblety, but it sure matches H.H. Holmes' description.
It really does.
It's his facial features, everything they said.
I don't know about, you know, as far as his height, but they say that, you know, maybe what did they say, like somewhere around there, as far as the description of Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
25 to 35 years old.
Yep.
At this time, and we watched a little thing, you know, on this to see if there was anything convincing as far as if H.H. Holmes ever visited that area at that time. Some say he could have, some say he didn't.
Yep. It goes both ways.
It really does. Yeah. And here, let's just expand this even more with the H.H. Holmes thing. What if Holmes was working with the other ones across, you know, across the pond? Because they're doing the same damn thing.
It could have been one big spiel. It could, like I said, it could have been a major, you know, organ, you know, stealing scheme. But
exactly.
They wanted fresh.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
They wanted fresh right after burial or just death. I mean, anything's possible.
And
you know, I wouldn't, you know, I would still investigate.
I'm still going to look into it, even though what we watched, a guy who wrote a book on H.H. Holmes, who was, you know, talking about the possible connection of him being Jack the Ripper. And he frowned on it in a sense. He, you know, but I still think it's compelling to look into. There's just so much similarities there.
There is, really.
I mean, like you said, he fits the part. He's got the background. He's got the look.
Yeah.
He's got the same description as how everybody, you know, described who got a look.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
That's why, you know, it's really a newer theory, but yeah, I would, you know, it's worth investigating for people, I think.
Yeah.
If you can definitively put him in London at the time, man, then yeah, he would be a top-notch suspect.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no doubt, because he was just that gruesome. Imagine a guy building a murder castle to invite people to him to murder. He didn't even go out and find him. He had him come to him.
and a side note, he did this in Chicago. There's a little bit of the H.H. Holmes story. He did this in Chicago.
Yeah.
At the World's Fair. Chicago, I think, was holding it for the first time or whatever, you know. Huge. People just coming from everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, you know, let's say you come in from out of state to go to this World's Fair.
Mm-hmm.
And the family that you leave behind to go to this World's Fair, all they know is you're going there.
Yeah.
You know, that obviously the technology wasn't there. You can't check up on somebody. You know, that there's once they leave, it's like they're gone.
Yeah.
Until they come back.
Yeah.
So, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, who knows how many people, you know, out of this huge crowd from all over, you know, it was like the perfect storm. And then borrows all this money, doesn't pay him back. You know, I mean, he's, you know, sued numerous times, builds this, you know, the murder hotel, murder house, or murder castle, I think they call it, you know. And, yeah, as you said, the people go to him because it was a hotel slash, like, torture chamber.
And one thing that I do find, absolutely, I really find, you know, interesting about it is he went from a person who was a medical student cutting up cadavers into a murderer.
Right.
You know, it's really fascinating how that happened.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was a murderer and just dissected the bodies because he loved it so much before he was a doctor. Who knows? But either way, he was dissecting bodies and taking organs out. So he would have known how to do that.
Absolutely.
You know, at 28 years old. In London.
Yeah, at that time, he was 28 years old. He would have been 28. So he fits the age.
Mm-hmm.
He fits roughly the height.
Yep.
He fits the description as far as a hat and a big mustache, which, again, was very common in that time.
Yes.
It was the fashion statement. So there was a lot of people.
Yes.
So if you want to discredit that part of it, fine. But you can't discredit the fact that you'd have to have some sort of medical background. You have to be some sort of a doctor. You'd have to have some kind of experience in carving up a body to be able to do in the time that Jack the Ripper had to remove 2, 3, 4 fucking organs.
Yes.
In a matter of, you know, some 5, 10 minutes max.
Yes.
Because like you mentioned earlier, these were big blocks that these cops were, you know, patrolling around.
Big city blocks. Yeah.
And it could take them 5 to 8 minutes to get around a block.
Yeah, and sometimes they weren't even walking a fast pace. They were stopping to look at that. So they wouldn't have had much time.
Yeah.
And just to point out, the reason why an American killer has really come up and a lot of people really agree with it is because of the witness who heard Jack the Ripper speaking to one of the victims.
Said he was foreign.
He said he definitely isn't from here. He was definitely a foreigner.
So he didn't speak that proper
spoke
English.
English, but did not speak it like they did.
That, like, the proper English,
So that's why a lot of people don't focus on it being somebody who is from there and lives there permanently.
Now, here's something, you know, and then, you know, just when you think, you know, you think you got a handle on it. What was the, you know, there was at one of the murder scenes, that Jack the Ripper, apparently he wrote on the wall.
He did.
Something about you. Do you remember that line?
The line that was written, there was a piece of an apron from one of the victims that was bloody that was sitting there that the police found. And when they looked up on the wall right above it, there was a saying written on the wall that said, "The Jews are the ones who will not be blamed for nothing."
Right.
and people have been trying to figure out.
Very strange.
One, they want to know, did Jack the Ripper write that? Pretty sure that they are, because there was a piece of evidence that looked like it was placed there on purpose right underneath it.
So he could see it, yeah.
Two, what does it mean? And three, why did the investigator come in the morning right after they found this body and have that message erased from the wall? He claims that it was because he didn't want to offend the Jews at the time, who were going through a lot of anti-Semitism in the area.
Uh-huh.
It's just pretty peculiar that that kind of evidence, you know, wasn't photographed.
And right.
It just wasn't.
Which they were photographing crime scenes at that point.
They
that
sure
wasn't
were.
Out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, a lot of the Jack the Ripper stuff was, you know, recorded on film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of it was pictures of, you know, people at the morgue. They were really investigating this case. And so for him to erase that, you know, without trying to figure out what the heck does it mean, you know, and not even really inform anybody that that was even up there. You know, just erase it. Don't speak of it. No,
right,
it
right. Exactly.
Anything.
Out of sight, out of mind, you know. Well, and granted, yeah, they didn't have, obviously, the CSI and the forensics teams that, you know, we have now. But it seemed odd to me that, you know, when there was a murder, they would, you know, it'd be a murder at you know, 4:30 in the morning, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
By six, before people are walking down the streets, they've already, you know, there's no sign of blood anywhere.
Completely cleaned up.
Completely clean. The whole crime scene washed up.
Just washed away.
You know.
And, like, you know, they couldn't do much for forensic back
then.
But you figure that they would at least photographed it. At the time,
again,
that was a big
exactly.
thing.
Yeah.
That they didn't. They wanted it cleaned up as fast as they could.
Out of the public eye.
And they always say, we're trying to stop a panic, but this was in the papers and everything. The
Everywhere.
Panic was already there.
Right.
You know, people were already freaking out. And so, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So people have, you know, they try to figure out what that's about, too. What does that saying mean?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's just to throw them off, just like the letters and everything. It's just a means to throw them off and maybe try to blame that on the Jews by writing that there.
That was really my first thought. that was really my first thought, that it was just it was to throw him off, just to throw a monkey wrench, you know, like what does this even fucking mean, you know, one of those kind of things, just to make them think, well, is there meaning behind this, to take them away from maybe focusing on something that's more concrete, you know. There's so much, you know, to dive into with this,
man.
And I still think, you know, there's you know, more to discuss, so maybe we will do another part on Jack and maybe further go into, you know, some more of the theories. Who was it, whose grandson were you telling me about the grandson that did the little lecture or whatnot?
Yeah, that's H.H. Holmes' grandson.
Yeah.
He does lectures now because he believes his grandfather was Jack the Ripper.
Interesting.
He claims to have some evidence and stuff, and I haven't, since it's so new, I really haven't dove into H.H. Holmes too much, but I definitely will. I am interested in seeing everything that's out there.
Right. Yeah, and he's got a video. I think you said it's on YouTube. You can catch that on YouTube. I guess you could just put in something like H.H. Holmes' grandson.
But I've got to say, even as convincing as it is because of the similarities between them and the looks, after all this time, I'm very locked in on two suspects for sure. Tumblety and Sickert, But if something could come out to put H.H. Holmes in London at the time,
that's damning.
That would be pretty spectacular.
That'd be pretty hardcore.
Yeah. That'd put him right there at the top of the list.
I really believe, if they can place him in London for the span of those, you know, at least those five murders.
Yeah.
The one, you know, I mean, of course, there could have been the Camden.
The Camden Town murders before.
Yeah, that came after, correct?
I think it was before.
It was before.
I have to look at it again. But yeah.
So there were some, but the main ones that they attributed to Jack the Ripper, the ones at the notes, you know, during those times, if they can place Holmes, you know, at that time.
Yeah.
Wow.
That would be pretty spectacular.
It really would.
Yeah.
It really would. So, yeah, I think we're going to wrap it up, but just for this podcast, because I really want to do a part two and dive some more into this, because again, there's so much to really, you know, discuss. Yeah. And I want to say this real quick. I was going to do the H.P. Lovecraft show, but I felt in order for me to take and really get to know this guy, you kind of have to read his works.
Yeah.
And, well, I work like 50 plus hours this week, right. So I just did not have the time, but I will eventually at some point in the future, I will get to that. But he's one of those guys where you kind of have to read, you know, some of his works and really understand, you know, the inner workings of them. So I'm going to work on that next couple weeks. Hopefully Malice will join us next week. He's chomping at the bits to get back, but you know, with a new baby and working and the holidays and everything, it's kind of it's warmed down a little bit, so I get it. But hopefully he did say that he may be back next week. So
very nice.
That would be very cool, because we'll have to get him in part two, because I would like to do, you know, a part two and talk some more about Jack the Ripper, because he could probably do a whole series.
Oh, ten of them for sure.
Easy. I mean, there's just so much stuff out there.
And I would love to say that too, man. Anybody who is interested in murder mysteries or any of that that hasn't dove into this yet, man, you really should.
Oh yeah,
it's an awesome community of a lot of people, man. Great discussions, and it's a really in-depth thing, and the suspects are all really interesting. Everything you really need about it.
Yeah, I mean, and just diving into you know, the suspects and just them, not even, you know, just the kind of people they were. They're just all interesting characters.
Yeah. Yeah, and a community full of really good people, too.
So check that out, man. If you guys are interested in learning more, there are a lot of dedicated people out there who do, and you're one of them, who do a lot of you know, research on this. It's interesting as hell. I think I'm going to look up some and you know, see what everybody's talking about and, you know, look into some new theories maybe to talk about next week. But until then, I'm Otis B. Dreads. I got my buddy Bobby here sitting in for Malice. And we'll see you next week as well, man. We got
to
get
you
back here on the part two of Jack the Ripper. Don't forget.
Always a fun conversation.
It is, man. It is, man. This is one of those murder mysteries, man, that will really get your brain going, man. It really get you, you know, thinking.
And it's good for you.
It is. Yeah. Builds character.
Yep.
It's good for the soul. But don't forget to check out gorehoundsofhorror.com, Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook, Night of the Living Dreads.com, no A in Dreads, as well as over there on Facebook. So, it was, again, a fun conversation. Thank you, Bobby, for sitting in once again. And, we'll see you guys next week. Part two of this Jack the Ripper murder mystery. We're playing Nancy Drew here at Night of the Living Dreads. We're trying to solve the great Jack the Ripper case. But it's going to be a fun conversation. Join us next week. We'll see you then.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.